Sup, thrill seekers. I'm Connor.
And I'm Dev, and you're listening to Mass Hysteria.
And live from New England, it's Wednesday night.
Woo! Okay, everyone, welcome or welcome back to Mass Hysteria. We are ending the year. Actually, this is coming up on the anniversary of our 1 year since release.
Is it past the anniversary?
December 17th, I believe.
Okay, so a couple days.
So, thank you all for joining us on this wild ride. Let's kick it off with a mass hysteria. This isn't a mass hysteria, honestly, but it's just how I've been entertaining myself the last couple of days. So anyone who is dating someone or friends with someone, or maybe it's your sibling who is
involved.
You
know anyone.
Yeah. If you've ever met another person, you may be the individual who is adjacent to someone that is addicted to video games.
Oh my God.
And so, my boyfriend plays video games. He plays.
My boyfriend does not.
Yeah.
Thank God.
One of us is moving up in the world. no hate on video games. But, yeah.
She's never moving up, no. I'm also teasing. Love
but,
you.
Well, he plays, like, the computer video games, too, mm-hmm. with his friends. I have no idea what the game is called. I call it Flashlight Tag. That's not what it's called, apparently. But he has these, like, soundproof headphones, and I can hear him talk to his friends, but he can't hear what I say back.
Yeah.
So I've been, like, cracking myself up, because every time he asks a question to the guys he's playing games with, I answer it back. So, like, the other day, he's like, how do you open the doors? And I'm like, you twist the freaking knob. Or he's like, oh, I grabbed a flashlight and a book. And I'm like, that's weird. You don't read. Like,
do they ever hear you?
No.
On the other end, they can't because the speaker.
And so,
God, that's so funny.
If anyone is looking for a productive way to cohabitate with someone that plays excessive video games, that's my
get the noise canceling headphones.
Exactly.
And make snarky comments.
And make really snarky comments.
That's solid relationship advice.
Yeah, Connor, actually, we're. This
we're
is a great
relationship
time to
therapists.
Yeah,
we're that's
starting
our
a new podcast.
Yeah, yep. Esther Perel, watch out.
So we are coming to the end of the year, like we said, which means we are going to ask for your financial contribution. I'm just kidding. But what you can do that would really help us is rate us in the Apple Podcast Store or Apple Podcast app,
yes.
I guess, because ratings really help us with the algorithm and. We enjoy reading them. We have some funny ones recently that have cracked both of us up.
We do love a good review. Also,
I don't think you can rate on Spotify, right? No, just Apple.
I think it's just Apple, yeah. But also, were you going to mention the Q&A?
Yeah, so our schedule.
Queue up.
Our schedule for the end of the year. Today we have an interesting episode that's personal to me, not that I was involved in it, but it takes place in my hometown. And the next year, we have this.
Next week.
Next
Almost
week.
Next year.
Yeah. It's fine.
It's fine.
My memory fog is setting in. Next week, we're doing an episode on a case that I found on TikTok, and I've been, like, obsessed with it. And I think it's really interesting because there is still a lot of potential for it to be. It's a cold case, but there's a lot of potential for it to be solved.
So our TikTok listeners, you may be interested.
So
maybe we'll even make another debut. I guess it's not a debut if it's your second time, but another TikTok.
Yeah. Can you all please let us know if you're also on TikTok? Because I mean, I'm scared to make a TikTok.
We don't know how this ish works.
That's true. Yeah.
We need help.
We need
can scroll.
Help.
That's it.
We can watch the cat TikToks and it ends about there. But yeah, so we're doing a really a case that I'm very intrigued by it. And my heart goes out to the family because they're trying to find answers to what happened. And so I'm not going to spoil anything, but we've been doing a lot of research to get that set up. So that'll be next week. And then we are going to finish the year with a little fun, like, Q&A style. We won't give all of it away, but, like, a year in review of, like, what we enjoyed and what we didn't, what's funny, what's not, etc. So if you do have a question that you think would be fun for us to talk about related to the show, let us know. But we do have some ideas for what we can cover.
Email, DM, Facebook message, all the things. Mm-hmm. Send us your cues. Booze.
Yik yak. I'm just kidding. So without further ado, are you ready? Connor also doesn't know this. So he's in the middle of finals. I'm in the middle of, like, a lot going on with
she
work.
Has a real
so
job
we
other than this.
So
I know it's hard to believe, but
I'm shocked myself. So we are
that you've kept the job.
Yeah. No, I love my job, but I have a big project. So we've been, like, balancing these episodes a little differently because we're both tired at night a little bit. But this is really fascinating, and I read this and just was very surprised because I never heard of this, and it happened in my hometown, which my parents moved. So I wanted to talk about this. I grew up in Dunstable, which is a really quiet town. It's a population of about 3,000, like, over or under. It kind of fluctuates, I think. You can walk basically anywhere you want. I rode my bike everywhere to my friends' houses.
It's very unclear what is downtown and what is not downtown. There's no real downtown.
There's no traffic light. There's, like, a 2-mile radius. It's like a very rural farm kind of feeling community. So this took place in Connor's favorite decade, the 80s.
You should have told me. I would have brought my sparkly pants.
I know. They're in the wash. Don't lie to our listeners.
I could have permed my hair for this. But no.
But no, he's back to his black hair. Okay. Eileen Muldoon, she lived on Fletcher Street in the 1980s with her husband. In 1983, she would have been 34 years old. Eileen's husband, Arthur, along with his brother James, opened Muldoon Brothers Incorporated, which was like an oil gas kind of service station in Lowell, like basically a gas stop. And when she lived on Fletcher Street, which is basically like a long winding street where there's a huge farm. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very, there's a lot of cows, very
lots
rural
of
area. Yeah. And so Eileen wanted to do something nice for her husband because, you know, he's starting this new venture. She wants to show her appreciation for him. And so she talks with her sister, Peggy. And Peggy has an idea. What if she purchases, like, a lawn care service for her husband? Lawn is, I'm assuming, very important to him. So her sister, Peggy, even provided, like, an ad for a local company. She had presumably heard good things about it, and Eileen was excited to get her husband this gift. So Eileen phoned the company, and she asked for, like, a quote on her lawn. And they sent out a young man. Now, this man's name... Young man. So this man's name was David Garabedian. He was 23 years old, and he was used to doing these kind of rounds for customers, going to the houses,
like,
quote them, surveying them, etc. His specific, duties, according to case files, were, quote, surveying the lawns of prospective customers, as well as applying liquid chemical treatments to customers' lawns. The defendant has worked for the company for about 1 month when he goes to Eileen's house.
Okay, so this is relatively new to him.
Yeah, he's just starting. And so he spends his entire day working with lawn chemicals, which, if you've ever had your pool treated or chemicals sprayed on your lawn, like...
Stuff's nasty.
It's nasty, but also you usually don't go near it for a couple days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't spend a lot of time there.
Yeah.
They tell you not to walk on it, wash your hands, blah, blah, blah.
So... Yeah, I don't remember that happening to my lawn, but I'm sure, I can imagine, that people who get
what,
their lawn
your
treated.
Your lawn being treated? No, it was definitely never treated. We love the crabgrass.
We love crabgrass.
Green is green.
So, the Mid-American Regional Council wrote this pamphlet about the risks of lawn chemicals. And they said that, quote, several types of cancer, immune response deficiencies, neurological diseases, and birth defects have been associated with exposure to lawn chemicals. By releasing chemical toxins in the environment, air and water quality suffer, ultimately causing health problems, end quote. So this is not surprising. This is like basically what you just said about why you don't go on a lawn that's just been treated. But these are kind of, I want to say, like things you would expect to hear about health risks associated with lawns. If you're looking at me like, what the heck is gonna happen with this? Just hold on. So, according to the court documents, on March 29th, 1983, the defendant left where he was working, Old Fox, the headquarter of the lawn company, excuse me, to perform his first lawn survey around 7:30 a.m.
That is an early work day. Yeah. Wow.
So
it's like a barn work day.
He was on site at 7:30 like to start his day. Yeah. He had a lot of appointments like all over the cities. Because especially that part of Massachusetts, the towns are super close to each other. Yeah. So he's like driving all over. And he hadn't eaten anything all day. So his blood sugar was probably low. And because he's also doing a job where you're moving around, right?
Yeah. And when was this again? Time of year?
March. So it's also chilly out.
Yeah. Not too hot yet, but.
But yeah.
Still, you're in and out of the car all day.
And he also hadn't urinated all day. Now, just that becomes relevant later. So around 4:30 p.m., he finished at Margaret Brassard's house, which was in Townsend. And then he made the drive over to Dunstable, which is probably about 20 to 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Margaret commented that he, at the time, seemed to be totally fine, like physically. He was polite. He was very clean cut. He was like a gentleman to her and her family. She had no complaints about his service. So he left their house. He arrived at 4:30 and then he left at 4:55. So whenever he left that house, it was probably about 20 to 30 minutes until he would arrive in Dunstable.
So probably like a little before 5:30.
Yeah, exactly. So when he reached Eileen's house, it initially kind of seemed like nobody was home. So he rang the doorbell a couple of times, and he decided, like, okay, well, you know, I'm basically giving her a quote anyway, so I'll just survey the land and kind of get straight to work. And if you kind of think about how this time frame falls, it isn't wild to think that Eileen wasn't home. She had a job too. She would have probably been finishing up her day.
Sure.
She worked as a clerk for the Lowell City Council. She was very devoted to public service. She seemed like a very lovely woman with a big heart, but Lowell to Dunstable is probably what, same thing, like 20 minutes,
depending on traffic.
Yeah. So she was gonna cross paths with David slightly after he got there, right? As David concluded his measurements, he kind of looked around, make sure the coast was clear, because he'd been holding his bladder for like a long time at this point, mm-hmm. and he really needed to relieve himself. So he was finishing up, going to the bathroom, and he noticed a petite woman watching him from like the top of a hill. Her backyard, I think, was kind of like a sloped hill, so she was at the top, like closer to the house in the driveway, and he was more down on in the lawn area. Mm-hmm. She was less than half his size, so he was a 240-pound man, very burly, and he towered over her. She was like 110 pounds,
mm-hmm.
so like very small petite woman. So she noticed him urinating on her property, and she was obviously, like, very shocked, and began scolding him loudly and yelling at him and basically saying, like, what do you think you're doing?
Mm-hmm.
So David, like, scrambled to zip up his pants, and then he started jogging toward where she was standing at the top of the hill.
Right.
And so this is a quote directly from what he said in the court documents. He walked around a wall and up the hill to attempt to talk to the woman out of her anger. She stated, well, I think I should call your boss. And he continued to apologize and, quote, tapped her on the arm saying, I'm really sorry you feel this way, end quote. So as soon as he said this, because he tapped her on the arm, David like, excuse me, because he tapped her on the arm, she turned around and scratched him. And oh, geez. This, like, on the face. And this left David feeling enraged. So at this point, they're both kind of standing near this ledge because they're like at the top of this hill. Mm-hmm. And David grabbed Arlene by the neck and manually strangled her until she was unconscious.
Oh, my God.
So the two of them fell off the ledge because presumably she, like, you know.
Pulled him over exactly. or
something. And perhaps trying to ensure she was really dead or something, he grabbed a lace from his sweatshirt and then choked her again.
Oh, my God.
And in a final twisted act, David grabbed three rocks, 48 pounds, 44 pounds, and 22 pounds, and threw them at her head.
Jesus.
To completely disfigure her face. So at this point, Eileen is deceased, and that obviously adds a complication because now you only have one side of the story for what happened.
Right.
Now, there are evil people like David in the world. We know this. We've covered some pretty dark cases on our show. But the strangest part of this case for me is his defense. So, again, he reiterated what happened, mm-hmm. and I guess we'll never actually know if that was how everything happened, but he claimed he was set off by her castigating him, but that he was triggered psychologically because of the lawn chemicals. They intoxicated him. This was his defense, okay?
What?
And so the UPI news said, quote, the DA said, David's like a defense attorney, said that David had been repeatedly exposed to chemical called Dursban, a type of organophosphate, over a two-week period, and was so intoxicated by the fumes at the end of the murder that he was unable to know right from wrong, end quote. That's like the equivalent of saying he sniffed too many markers.
Yeah.
And he just couldn't concentrate.
And also, like, he wasn't working with any chemicals at that moment.
Yeah,
like,
so
he was surveying lawns, so.
So, yeah, okay. So even, they brought in, like, medical professionals to solidify the claims that his behavior was not shocking given the exposure. But I'm sure I can't find this online, but I'm sure they probably got paid a lot because other professionals came in and were like, there's no way that lawn right. chemicals would make you behave that way.
That is so weird.
So, six men and six women found these claims to be just as wild as we do, and I'm sure all of you listening also feel that these are, this is a crazy defense to put forth. So,
unless there's something we don't know. Maybe we don't know about these crazy lawn chemicals.
Yeah, I think that's really all that he could try to say. I don't know. But he was deemed guilty, and he was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. One of the men, I guess, was overheard when the verdict was read. He was like, now we got you, sucker.
Oh, my God.
Which just kind of made me smile, because what he did was obviously disgusting and horrific to Eileen, and they got justice. So he tried to appeal. And this was very interesting to me because he's really, if you thought he was grasping at straws with the lawn chemicals defense, just wait. He claimed that they couldn't prove that it was Eileen who died. And they're like,
oh my God.
They're like, we have a death certificate. You were in her yard and her keys were next to her body.
Right.
It's definitely Eileen. So then he tried to claim that they were being prejudiced because an Armenian juror was like brought in to be a witness,
yeah.
or not a witness, a juror,
mm-hmm.
and she was dismissed. And he was like, I'm also Armenian, so because she was dismissed, this was like an act of prejudice.
Oh my God.
And the judge was like, no. I actually didn't even know that she was Armenian. And he also said that the photos of Eileen's body were brought on like way too early in the case, that they created prejudice as well. That's his favorite word, apparently. And the judge was like, no, like what you did was brutal and malicious.
But,
and
like,
that
I mean,
shows in the
yeah,
photos.
It would have caused, you know, like less prejudice if maybe you didn't do it.
If you, and so.
But also, like, what is it, Matt? I mean, obviously it was her body, but like if it wasn't.
Yeah, he's still.
It's still a person that you killed.
He's really.
Yeah, he's a character.
He's trying really hard to undo what he did, but what he did was horrific, and he's trying not to pay for it, but he will pay for it in jail. So the defendant David argues that opposing testimonies from expert witnesses went beyond their expertise, which is, I know that sounds really wordy, but basically what they're saying is that these witnesses that were brought in, the prosecution brought in,
like to disprove
the yeah that they were theory. Like extrapolating, and he was like, they don't have the credentials to make those conclusions.
Oh,
and this okay. was an exact quote from the appeal, where they were basically like, no, David, they are qualified. It said, quote, both witnesses were experienced clinical psychiatrists who were clearly qualified to testify concerning the defendant's condition at the time of death. And
so, how are they not like laughing at
this? I just like, it's insane. Are. Yeah. So the last one, that I thought, I mean, he has like multiple items that he tries to appeal, but this was the last like big one, is he was saying that, he felt that they were trying to early on sway the jury to believe that it was a case of extreme atrocity, and the judge's instructions like permitted the defendant to be found guilty of murder in the first degree on either deliberate premeditation or extreme atrocity and cruelty.
Mm-hmm.
And basically his argument was like, she was unconscious, so how could I have been cruel? Because she didn't feel it. That was literally what it says,
right,
in the document.
Right, it's not cruel at all to kill an unconscious person. It's fine. It's not illegal, actually.
And the judge was basically like, well, without even unpacking how effed up that is, he also basically was like, you threw stones at her. Like, that alone is cruel.
Yeah.
So David Garabedian is still in jail, presumably, because he has a life sentence, and he's tried to appeal, and it hasn't gone through. But to end it on, like, a little bit of a more optimistic tone, Peggy, her sister, has said that like, the family is very committed to public service to honor Eileen. And she told the Lowell Sun, the hardest part is like wondering why, because she hasn't been able to really find an answer, but she tries to live out each day honoring Eileen's legacy. And her parents visited her sister's grave every day until they died, which was sad. Breaks my heart. But I had never heard this case, and it happened like right down the street from me. I mean, we'll find out when they listen to it. But aside from the fact that it happened where I grew up, this is a wild defense.
It is wild.
He's obviously a monster. What he did, he should be punished for. Wow. And Eileen, I like found a photo of her. She looked like a very pretty, lovely young woman. And David took her life, and he should spend the rest of his time in jail for the life that he took. So yeah, you hadn't heard of this,
so
right?
Bizarre. No, I'd never heard of this.
Let us know if you're listening, if you heard of this, because it happened, 1980s, which would have been when my parents moved in.
Mm-hmm.
So wild. But yeah, until next time, definitely tune in next week, because we are planning to wind down the year with a very crazy, wild story that found on TikTok. We're trying to, you know, relate to the youngins.
Relate to the youngins.
We're going to be publishing it on MySpace. Just kidding.
Face, the book.
The book of the faces.
Fake book.
The book of the heads. Okay, until next time. Bye, guys.
Bye, guys.